Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yo, what's up, New Orleans? What's up across the Gulf South? What's up to you listening wherever you are tonight at WWL.com, the radio.com app. Welcome on into the program. Week two of the NFL season is upon us. And as I expected anyways, Cincinnati all over Baltimore here at the end of the first quarter, 14-0. The Bengals on the back of two Andy Dalton touchdown passes out to a two-score lead over the Ravens. Joe Flacco, just 2 of 5, 21 yards, and a pick. This is not elite Flacco, not the one we saw last week against maybe the league's worst team in the Buffalo Bills. We got a lot to talk about here NFL-wise, especially in the opening hour. Steve Kort coming up at 8:40, but I've got my full NFL picks and predictions. We'll get to those like we will every single Thursday here on the program. And these are online at WWL.com. I pick every single game against the spread. I also pick every single game straight up and give you a little insight and analysis, try to have a little fun with these articles too. This was a project, man. This is something I really am passionate about. It's like a six-hour write of this article and the research that I do for it every single Thursday. But that's online at WWL.com. You can also find it on Twitter at WWLAMFM. I tweeted it out on my personal account as well. We'll get to LSU and Auburn in hour number two. James Crepia will take us behind enemy lines for Auburn as he covers the Tigers for AL.com. Alan Waddell is here to talk some prep football in hour number three, and Dan Lobby will take us behind enemy lines for Cleveland Browns in hour number two. Well, let's start off with a little NFL picks and predictions segment. Tim Zimmer, who's back at Master Control tonight, we're going to give you about 30 minutes to get your pick six together. So Tim didn't make his picks yesterday. Our guest picker was Logan. And as usual, Tim, I told you last year I was going to wipe the floor with you guys when it was me, you, and Christian. I did. I'm calling my shot again. I said I will be over 500. And I will win this thing again. And so far in week one, man, you had a bad week. You were 1-5, right?
Yeah, I was 1-5, but I'm so confident in my picks this week. I'll probably eat crickets if I don't go over 500
or 500. Wait, you'll eat crickets? Is that what you said?
I'm so confident in my bets this week.
Okay, well, you could fade both Logan and I if you were listening close enough anyways as we made our picks yesterday. Let's get you picks and predictions for this week. And if you want to hop on in, you can send me a text at 87870, and you can also give us a call at 504-260-1870. That's 504-260-1870. Oh, and our Blue Runner Foods opinion poll before we move on at WWL.com. Simple, who wins Saturday, LSU or Auburn? You tell us. Again, log on, cast your vote at WWL.com. So let's get to my view on week two of the NFL season. You know, there's a lot of old football cliches thrown around in the early season. You can't win a championship in week one. It's only one game. Even I was sitting here talking on Tuesday about, hey, you need to relax here a little bit. It's just one game for the Saints. So by literal definition, I guess those statements are true, right? You can't win a championship in week one. And it is only one game. However, if you dive deeper into it and you look at the modern analytics of the NFL schedule, they'll tell you that week two, yes, this week right here, is the most important of the season in a variety of statistical categories. And I'll explain what I mean here. 538.com, they're an ESPN subsidiary, but they've been doing it a long time before ESPN acquired them. They do really advanced analytics of sports, politics, a whole bunch of stuff. A couple of years ago, they laid out a game-by-game analysis of just how much your playoff chances can either increase or decrease on a game-by-game basis. And they go through every single record. For example, if you are 0-1 like the Saints are right now, you have a 25% chance historically to make the playoffs. If you go 0-2, that drops to 10%. If you get to 1-1, it's at 41%. So there's a 31% swing between what happens this week. you're able to increase your win expectancy by 2.5 games by winning on week two if you're 0-1. That is the largest win leverage for any one win on the NFL schedule throughout the year. Teams that are 0-1 and win in week two, again, they increase their win expectancy by 2.5 games. I know this is a lot of advanced analytics mumbo jumbo on the radio here, but the point is, and you can read all this in my article, and I put the charts that 538 referenced in there also, that it's not week 17 or 16 or 15. By most statistical categories, it's this week right here, as far as playoffs are concerned, that is the most important in the NFL. Kind of crazy to think, right? That teams can make or break their season this early. You got a lot of favorites who are in the hole here. Saints, Falcons, Chargers all faltered last week and find themselves in, really, with these statistics, near must-win situations. Now, there is glimmers of hope for teams who finish 0-2. Again, you've still got a 10% chance to make the playoffs. Saints did it last year. Dolphins did it in 2016. About one team per season makes that climb from 0-2 to the playoffs. But I don't think it's a tightrope that most teams want to walk. By the way, Cincinnati has scored again. They're pouring it on Baltimore. And I got a listener out there who's been tweeting me many times. And by the way, I picked Baltimore in this game. We'll get to that in just a second. So I'm with you here. I thought Baltimore would win this game, but I've had one listener to the program been tweeting at me very loudly the last couple of weeks that Cincinnati's going to make the playoffs and make some noise. A.J. Green's third touchdown already. He has 3 catches, 43 yards, 3 touchdowns. Andy Dalton, 9 of 14 for 121 and 3 touchdowns. Incredible. Bengals looking good. So we'll start here. Here's my picks for the week. We'll analyze some of the games that are kind of ho-hum. I'll just give you my pick against the spread. But we'll start with the Bengals and Ravens. And I know people coming into this one, we're talking about angry Joe Flacco and contract Flacco here. Yes, he has a contract through 2021, but the Ravens can get out of it with relatively little financial penalty after this year. And obviously with Lamar Jackson, they're thinking, okay, this could be a redo of 2012 when playoff Flacco emerged and elite Flacco emerged, led them to a Super Bowl on the back of the best playoff run that any quarterback has ever had, 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. Well, I didn't think it would happen tonight. Here's the thing. Flacco coming into this game, before tonight, he's thrown just 19 touchdowns against 23 interceptions in his career against Cincinnati. This has been a house of horrors for him, especially this one's on the road. So I had the Bengals not only covering, the Bengals were a home dog on a short week on Thursday night. This was about as easy of money, I think, as you're ever going to get in Vegas sports betting. It really was. So I was all over the Bengals here. I thought the Bengals would win outright. I had them 23-20, and I thought the Bengals obviously would cover. Another big one here in the NFC, Panthers at the Falcons. You know, Carolina hasn't won in Atlanta since 2014, the regular season finale that year. This spread feels a little too high, though. Falcons, we told you, they've lost two of their most important defensive players to injured reserve. Safety Keanu Neal, linebacker Deion Jones. I just wonder how the defense is going to contain Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey in that running game without those two Pro Bowlers. Neal, very important as a safety against the run game here. You also had this mystery disappearing act to the Falcons' offense, and I guess more specifically Matt Ryan here. He hasn't looked like a guy who won that 2016 NFL MVP. Not this year, not last year. Maybe Ryan really isn't a lead anymore. Saints fans would love that, right? Speaking of former MVPs who've fallen on hard times, I have been very critical of Cam Newton the last 2 years. He looked nowhere near like the guy who won that 2015 MVP. But I will say, objectively last week, he looked a lot more comfortable and a lot more confident with Norv Turner. That was the first game with offensive coordinator Norv Turner. So I like the Panthers to keep this one close. Too many injuries, too many question marks for the Falcons here. I do have the Falcons winning at home and kind of saving their season, but I think the Panthers cover. I got the Falcons 27, Panthers 23. How about the Jets and Dolphins? I threw this one in here as these are two surprising 1-0 teams. If I ask you who are the 1-0 teams in the AFC, not a lot of people are going to pick both the Jets and the Dolphins if you weren't paying close attention last week. But Sam Darnold looked like the guy who should have been drafted at number 1 overall by the Browns. Todd Bowles has gotten the patience that he deserved from the Johnson family and ownership. And I think the Jets, if you're looking for a surprise playoff team in the AFC, watch out for the Jets. If Darnold is as good as he was in week one, the Jets could contend in a very bad division. And really, an AFC where there's no middle ground here. I don't think there's a lot of middle ground in this AFC. I got the Jets covering here. They're 2.5-point favorites. I got Jets 26, Dolphins 20. I'm Seth Dunlap. This is The Last Lap, my NFL picks against the spread and straight up. Vikings-Packers, this is an interesting one and a tough one to kind of handicap here because of the Aaron Rodgers situation. I think he's going to play, and you got kind of two different lines here. You got the Packers at minus one, a one-point favorite with Rodgers, and we just saw the sportsbook, the Superbook in Las Vegas, drop the Packers to seven-point underdogs. They're at plus seven now in the sport and the Superbook because they don't think Rodgers is going to play. Here's the thing. Even if Rodgers plays, I actually like the Vikings to win this game outright in either case with even a hobbled Rodgers. This defense is too good. This is a complete team. This is as complete of a team as any in the National Football League. I was really impressed last week with them. Kirk Cousins looked like he's worth every penny of that contract that Minnesota gave him. I'm going to take the Vikings at plus one, and I'm also even going to take them at minus seven if Rodgers doesn't play. Vikings 24, Packers 17. Saints and Browns, Saints 8.5-point favorites. Ralph Michaels, our handicapper out in Vegas at wagertalk.com yesterday, he gave us a good stat here for our Saints, saying that teams who are coming off a loss as a double-digit favorite at home, they cover over two-thirds of the time the next game. And I'm with them here against the Browns. Everybody's kind of fawning over this Browns defense. Everybody thinks the Saints team is now going to implode like they did in 2014, 15, and 16. It's not going to happen. The Saints team is too talented. And remember the last time Greg Williams came to town here? The Saints put up 49 points against him. Okay, you can give up 48 points if you want again. As long as you score that much, I think the Saints are going to feast on this team. Look, the defense is good. I think the Saints at home here are better. I got the Saints a couple of touchdown winner here, 34-20. One of my favorite games of the week here is the Steelers hosting the Chiefs. I have been all over and on the bandwagon for Patrick Mahomes for a couple of months now. And I think, like I said yesterday, he could be the most talented passer Andy Reid has ever coached. You know, Tyreek Hill, I think we mentioned this a couple of times. Tyreek Hill predicted this offense was going to be the most explosive in the league, I think about a month ago, and people laughed at him. Well, he might be right. Not he might be. He's going to be right. Are they going to be the best offense in the league? I don't know. Are they going to be one of them? Yeah, I think so. Here's the thing, though. Steelers, different group at home, and they're a different group when their backs are up against the wall. They just came off that ugly tie, 21-21 against the Browns. They're 4.5-point favorites. I really do like the Chiefs. I had them in the playoffs in my preseason predictions, and now since they beat the Chargers on the road, I actually have them winning the AFC West now. But I like the Steelers here. I like the Steelers to cover 34-28 in a relative shootout here in the NFL. One more before we go to break. Bucks at the Eagles. This is an interesting line here. If you just think about that game, defending champs against the Bucks, you think, oh man, they must be a huge favorite here. This is on the road in Tampa. Well, not so fast. And it's not just because of what the Bucs did last week. It's more what Nick Foles isn't doing. Get to Foles in just a second. But the bearded one, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he kind of swashbuckled his way through the Saints defense. Most impressive performance of his career. He said he's playing his best football he's ever played. I actually kind of agree with him here. You know, it's not completely unprecedented for an older quarterback. He's 35 going on 36, or maybe he just turned 36, Fitzpatrick. It's not completely unprecedented for guys to really have breakout seasons late in their career. Rich Gannon did it. Rich Gannon, he was kind of a no man, a nobody, until he was 34, became a star in Oakland, won MVP at 37. That was his best year. I'm not saying Fitzpatrick is going to go all Gannon on us. I'm not saying that at all. But he did look comfortable here in Dirk Cutter's offense. And I love controversy. I really do. So what I'm rooting for here for Tampa, I want them to go 3-0, and I want the ultimate capital letter quarterback controversy when Jameis Winston comes back in week four. It's kind of what I'm rooting for here. But I have the Bucs covering here. They're 3.5-point dogs. I just don't like what Foles is how bad. Nick Foles just looks completely lost. Sound like Charlie Whitehurst. I got Eagles 23, Bucks 20. Bucks do cover here, though. Again, 3.5-point dogs. We'll take a break. I will continue with my picks coming back, and you can send yours in. 870-870, the text line, and the phone number is 504-260-1870. I'm Seth Dunlap. This is The Last Lap. All right, welcome back. Making my NFL picks against the spread. We will continue here as the Baltimore Ravens have just scored, so they're finally on the board. 21-7, Bengals leading the Ravens on Thursday Night Football. A.J. Green, if you missed it earlier, 3 touchdown catches already, and we're only at the midway point of the second quarter. He's going off with a capital O. Bucks and Eagles, we just told you I have the Bucks covering the 3.5-point spread. Outside of the Saints game here, the one I'm most interested in is Patriots-Jags. Patriots at Jaguars. Patriots a road favorite here by just a single point. So this is basically a pick 'em. And this is supposedly where we finally find out that the Patriots can be dethroned in the AFC. I don't know if I'm buying it here yet. You know, if you listen to the program, I am high, very, very high on the Jaguars. I do think that they are a Super Bowl contender, but the Patriots have proven time and time and time and time again, they kind of swat away these challengers in the regular season. They just do. Are the Jaguars ready for prime time? I can't wait for this one. I kind of didn't know where to go here. Obviously, it would not surprise me at all if this defense shuts down the Patriots offense and the Jags win at home. I got the Patriots covering, though, here at Patriots 26, Jags 20. How about the Giants 3-point dogs? I've got them over the Cowboys on the road here. And the reason why, fans in Dallas are acting like they didn't see this anemic offense coming. Dak Prescott isn't Tom Brady. He's got to have actual weapons around him to throw the football to. No Jason Witten, no Dez Bryant. All he's got is Cole Beasley and a bunch of dudes on the outside. I know as much as John Gruden and Pete Carroll would like to think, you're not going to win in this league with no weapons on the outside. People point to that Seahawks year. Oh, look, you can run the ball with beast mode. You can win a championship. Well, yeah, they also had Doug Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse, and a quarterback who is light years ahead of where Prescott is. Giants should be an explosive offense this year, even with Eli Manning doing his Trent Dilfer impression late in his career. Dallas is going to have a hard time keeping up. I've got the Giants 27 and the Cowboys 20. Monday night game, Seahawks over the Bears. This one's pretty easy for me for one stat only. Seattle on Monday night is absurd, especially in the Pete Carroll era. They had the highest winning percentage on Monday night football, home or away, and that has continued under Pete Carroll. Russell Wilson is just ridiculous on Monday night. Give me the Seahawks not only to cover their 3-point dogs here, a 3.5-point, actually, underdogs here. I like them to cover and win on Monday night. Seahawks 24, Bears 23. My other picks here against the spread, I've got the Chargers minus 7.5 over the Bills. The Titans at plus 2.5 over the Texans. Colts plus 6 over Washington. Cardinals, this spread's too big here, even for the Rams. Cardinals plus 13. I've got them covering the Rams. 49ers. They'll win, and they will cover. They are 6-point favorites over a dysfunctional Lions team. And the Raiders on the road. They lose, but they cover the 6-point spread. Back after this. Here's a texter from the 504 saying, rewind the tape. You picked the Jags over the Patriots yesterday. No, I didn't. I actually had the Patriots at minus 1 in my pick 6 we did to the end of the show yesterday. So I'm consistent here. Look, I'm high on the Jags. There's no doubt about it. I'm not trying to hedge. Sometimes I do. We make so many different predictions. Sometimes one day I'll think something and one next day I'll think another, especially if the game's supposed to be as good and as close as that one is. But I've had the Patriots both days yesterday. Welcome back to the program. Apparently Andy Dalton. Tim, what happened here? You were trying to tell me Andy Dalton just got kind of cheap-shotted. Is that right?
Yeah, he got pushed from behind after a pass, and it really wasn't anything at all. He just kind of flopped, and they called a personal foul penalty on the Ravens to keep the drive alive.
Hmm. Interesting. We'll get to Steve Court here in about 7 or 8 minutes, talking Saints and Bucks, co-host of Fans First Take with me and former Saints offensive lineman. Let's go to the phone lines, though, at 504-260-1870. Pierre and Gentile, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Seth? I wanted to make a comment about the Giants because they're my dark horse for this year, and I'm not saying they're going to get to the playoffs, but, I mean, I see, you know, a team that could definitely win between 7 and 9 games. What do you see for them this year?
I had them at 7 and 9, so I'm right there with you, Pierre. Here's the problem, though. In the NFC, 9 wins isn't even going to be enough to make the playoffs. I don't believe it. This conference is so top-heavy. So top-heavy. I'm not even sure 10 wins gets you into the playoffs, assuredly, this year. In my official predictions, I had a 10-win San Francisco team missing the playoffs. I do think the Giants are going to be competitive. They're too talented. They were even competitive last week. Even though it was ugly early, they came back a little bit against the Jags. I like them against Dallas. I think they might be the second-best team in that division. I guess we'll see on that. But there's just too many good-to-great teams in this conference, from the Eagles and the Packers and the Vikings and the Rams. And I do think the Saints are going to be here. And who knows what happens with the Panthers and the Falcons. Maybe they're fighting with the 49ers. It's just kind of one of those final playoff teams. We'll see. I do have them at 7-9. Maybe they get to 9-7-ish. I think 10 wins is a stretch for that club and this conference. I really do. We'll see. Thanks for the call, Pierre. I'm not trying to hate on Eli Manning. I know it's a sensitive subject here. I just don't think he can win another Super Bowl. Tim, do you think Eli Manning right now, I'm not talking about Eli Manning 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I'm talking about Eli right now. Do you think he's capable of winning a Super Bowl?
I think they're capable to make in the divisional playoffs, maybe the NFC Championship. Not this year, but if they load up maybe in a year or two. They have a playmaker in Odell. They have a decent defense. They did have one, I mean, I want to say like last year when they had that good defensive line, or 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, correct. I think they're good enough to make the playoffs, but I don't think they're good enough to make a Super Bowl or even get to the Super Bowl right now.
No, I'm not there either. He hasn't been very good the last few years, and he's declined, and he keeps declining every single year. Last year, an 80 quarterback rating, 86 the previous year before that. Last year, 19 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. Year before that, 26-16. That's certainly capable. He's in the twilight of his career, Eli. 37 years old. Look, I was being a little bit hyperbolic saying he's Trent Dilfer. He's not. He's better than Trent Dilfer was at this point in his career. But look at the quarterbacks in this conference. Carson Wentz, Drew Brees, Cam Newton, Russell Wilson, Jimmy Garoppolo. Although, there's one, Jimmy Garoppolo, he did not look good. He played against the Vikings defense. But if you get that kind of money, you can't turn the ball over 3 times and look completely over your head. That didn't look like an offense or a quarterback that inspires much confidence. I know it's just one game, and that defense made the Saints look pretty pedestrian last year in Week 1, so there's some history there.
I wouldn't be worried about that offense because Kyle Shanahan has always had a pretty good offense. I mean, look what he did with Atlanta when they were there, and look what's happening now with Steve Sarkisian.
Do the Falcons miss him or what?
Oh, yeah. So just look at that offense. I think Jimmy Garoppolo will be fine. I think their offense will be fine. I don't know if they'll win the division because you got the Rams there, but I think they're going to be a decent team.
Well, Jimmy Garoppolo, it's not like he lit the world on fire last year. Everybody just remembers that 5-game winning streak. But nobody really talked about, really dove into the statistics behind that run by Jimmy Garoppolo. He only threw 7 touchdowns in 5 games and threw 5 picks in 5 games. Quarterback rating was just a hair over 80. Completion percentage, good, 67. Yards per attempt, really good, 8.8, but I don't know. We'll see. No, I think Garoppolo's going to be fine. I'm not trying to trash Garoppolo here. Obviously, he's got the tools to be a very good quarterback in this league, but didn't look good last week. Did not look good in last week. Here's a text from the 504. If it weren't for those defenses with Strahan, et cetera, he would not have won any Super Bowls. I think he's talking about Manning there. Text from the 504, Drew Brees only won 1 Super Bowl. Yeah, that's okay, Captain Obvious. Yes, he has. I'm not sure what that's in reference. You saying you take Manning over Brees? Yeah, let's have that conversation. All right, we'll take a break here. Coming back, Steve Court will join us to talk some Saints Browns. Bengals driving on the Ravens one more time here. They have a 2nd down at the Ravens 26-yard line. There's a pass to the left side, incomplete off of A.J. Green's hands as he tumbles to the turf, head over heels on the left side. We'll take a break. Back with Steve Court after this. I'm Seth Dunlap on The Last Lap. Welcome back to the show. My Week 2 picks, both against the spread and straight up, online at WWL.com. If you miss me giving those out here on the air, check the podcast in just a little bit. The Last Lap at WWL.com or the radio.com app. Let's welcome on in Steve Court, my partner on Fans First Take, the Acadian Windows Fans First Take on Saints game days here on WWL, and of course, former Saints offensive lineman. Steve, what's going on, man? Are you recovered yet from that disappointment on Sunday?
We'd have no choice. The one thing you got to keep remembering, and the one thing that sort of just brought back a lot of this to me, was I started thinking, Sam Bradford last year in 2017, first game he put it, he smoked us. He looked like Tom Brady or something, and had the career game of his life, and it made us look pretty bad. And okay, maybe he might have been surrounded by some different people of talent, in that organization at the time, compared to what Tampa Bay was last week. But look, you can't take anything away from Tampa. And if you think you're going to do anything in this league by just rolling out there on Sunday and think because either record wise or talent wise that you're going to just run over a team, you got another thing coming. So I'm always taking each week at a time.
What do you see in the trenches here, and I guess specifically on the defensive side of the football? I'm talking about it a lot the last couple of days, Steve.
Yeah.
Yes, the back end was bad. There's no doubt about that. Multiple breakdowns, but the front side was not good.
The front end was bad. The front end was not good, and we got zero pressure. I mean, I saw very little pressure whatsoever, and really Tampa Bay's offensive line was just – they were stroking us. They really were. They were just absolutely I was watching these guys dominate us. And that's pretty surprising because I think we have a pretty talented group of guys that should never be dominated. And it's sort of – I thought, something's going on. Either these guys are coasting for some reason. They're not playing sort of with the same viciousness that they sort of have to have and, sort of the same intensity that you have to have in each and every week to sort of make that whole thing work. And really, that front seven can get off and do their thing. And the secondary, they look as good as they are. They'll really look good. And they did. It was a collective abortion. It was bad.
Yeah, and it's against a team that was supposed to be, and I know this it never works out how you right. think it is or it's supposed to, but that was supposed to be one of the worst teams in the league and really one of the softest openers you're ever going to have if you're a Saints fan.
Yeah, again, I think a lot of times it's the beginning of the season and everybody's kind of thinking, okay, let's go out there and just play our game and let's go out there and make any mistakes. And I think sometimes they kind of maybe left a little bit of that game in the locker room because I'm not saying they weren't ready to go. They're always prepared. I know Sean Payton's teams and how he goes about doing that. They're always prepared. And these guys are pros. They know what they're doing. I think what happens is they got in a situation and, like I told you last week, I said, I hate being right. When you said, what am I chicken about, remember?
Yep, I do.
Well, the thing I'm chicken about is if we can't stop them on the running, and it's, now it's, second and one or second and two or, third and one all the time, and now all of a sudden we've got a problem because, and I said, this guy's a better quarterback than Jameis Winston is, and that worries me because, he's a backup, but he's really not the backup. He's their quarterback. And I think that anybody will agree with you at this point. Hindsight's always 20/20, but at the same time, he proved how good he was. And he had a great day and didn't make any mistakes. And then you can see, like anything else, that old adage, you let a sucker hang around for a while, and they get more confident and more confident and more confident. And pretty soon it was kind of like, okay, now we're in a bad spot. And you hate being in a shootout because all that means is, you got to roll the dice all the time, and you can't outscore everybody each and every week to win a game.
Steve Court, co-host of the Acadian Windows Fans First Take on WWL on Saints Game Days. Andy Dalton has thrown another touchdown pass just moments ago. That is four for Dalton in the first half. My goodness. A halt with the Andy Dalton jokes, everybody, apparently. I'm curious to know what you think about the storyline that's kind of been matriculating its way around here locally the last few days about why the Saints consistently under Sean Payton get off to slow starts at least the last handful of years since he's come back from Bounty Gate here in the regular season. And I don't think there's necessarily an answer. I don't know if there's a correlation between anything. But the one thing that I do wonder is his philosophy in training camp and in the preseason of really staying away from contact and even in comparison to modern NFL. And I don't necessarily think it's the wrong thing, Steve, because you're sacrificing maybe some stuff early on for health and longevity of guys and abuse on the body towards the end of the season. Do you think that correlates at all?
I think what you said I think it's a pretty good theory. I don't know if it's anywhere accurate, but I mean, it's well thought out. you know, and that could certainly be plausible. But I sort of have a feeling that it's it just takes his teams, for whatever combinations of reasons, a couple weeks before it all begins to gel. And then once it does, then you get the intensity, and then you get all the things that you're sort of looking for, you know, that'll help your team reach, the types of goals and things like that it sets for itself each and every week. But for whatever combinations of reasons, you know, it wasn't a health issue. It wasn't like the guys are tired coming in here. It wasn't like they were leg whipped. And there's times, look, when I was playing, you know, it was – training camp was a whole different animal. The season was downhill and shady. I couldn't wait for the regular season to start because I knew, hey, okay, now I've got to go through 16 weeks to see if I can make it. But, hey, the worst part's over with, and I'm going to be okay now because this is easy. So I don't know. There were times that we went into regular season games really being fatigued. And I don't see that happening, so I don't want to blame it on that. And those guys take such good care of themselves at this point, and they know so much more about nutrition and hydration and all the things that you need to do to be started. So I think it was just really sort of going out there and really maybe thinking that, hey, you know, we're really, really good, and this team, we should really beat this team. And I just don't think they went out there with the intensity they had to have. And it showed.
Yeah, well, they better bring it this week, especially offensively. So take me into the offensive meetings, okay, and take me behind the scenes here as this offense prepares to face a defense that was +5 in the turnover margin last week. They got what looks like an absolute superstar in Myles Garrett now on the defensive line at defensive end. So here comes that pass rush. And then you got now the secondary behind it because Denzel Ward, 2 interceptions, the rookie in the first week. They're at 3 levels, very good on all 3 levels too, Steve.
Yeah, look, this, and I, you'll hear me say this often, but there's just a very, very fine line between winning and losing. And you can tell that a team like Cleveland that has just really been the cellar dweller and, you know, sort of the butt of a lot of jokes in the last couple of years. But that poses a problem. And I can tell you that when you are in a game, a competitive game, when there's other people out there that are professionals that take their jobs very seriously, just like you do, and preparing each and every week for that, and a mentality that you have to get yourself prepared for those games, there's a tendency to be, they're looked at as a wounded animal, and that could be very, very dangerous because the only thing this team is trying to do now is win a game. That's the first and foremost thing they're trying to do. Now, that's what everybody wants to do, but look, this team's had a problem doing that, and they had, you know, a plethora of turnovers last week and still couldn't beat the Steelers, had to tie them, which has got to be so frustrating to think of what in the world do we got to do. Well, it looks like we might be able to sort of pull this off next week against New Orleans if the defense plays like the way they did last week against Tampa Bay. And I can tell you right now that if we do, they will win. So, look, there's no question in my mind. You think that this team is not as talented. It's not about the guys on the roster. Those guys on the roster, there's a bunch of young players on there, but there's a bunch of young, really, really good players. And each and every year, and each and every game, and each and every rep, and each and every practice, those guys are getting better and better and better and learn how to play as not only professionals, but learn how to play together as the Cleveland Browns. And it's going to be a problem. If you go out there, hey, they've got a mentality, look, we're coming into, you know, we're going to be in a different, it's going to be a loud environment in New Orleans. They've got great fans down there. They go crazy. They're sophisticated. They cheer at the right times. They do all the things that you would hope that a big, strong home base would do. And they've got these great players, you know. And, you know, they're supposed to be picked as one of the favorites. They can sit there and point all that stuff out. And each one of those guys is dwelling on that, saying, okay, this is great. This is what I'm looking for. This is why I got in this thing, is because this is the most competitive environment I can put myself in. And this is where we are as a team. We haven't won anything. There's no pressure on us. And the pressure is going to be on New Orleans.
So yeah.
You know, it really is. Because at this point, there's high expectations for New Orleans. And I have them. And I still have them. Look, just because, okay, you ran it, you got your nose beat up, you know, in the first game out. Okay, well, that doesn't mean anything. We've seen that happen before. Look, we had the same start last year, okay, and we had to end up having a pretty good year. So, and you can't compare years. You can't. But I'm just using it as an example. But I'm just saying that I think that, look, you better go out there and better take care of business, and you better bury these guys quick, and don't take your foot off the gas. And the defense better go out and say, you know what, sometimes embarrassment leads to the the most cure, the quickest cure possible. So I think that team was embarrassed last week, and I would hope that they would rectify that this week.
Well, they have a motivator going to be standing over on the opposite sideline, and that's Greg Williams, at least for the coaching staff and some of these guys who've been around for a while. You've been behind the scenes here. Is there a real kind of chutzpah to stick it to Greg Williams still? We saw it a couple of years ago, 49 points when he was coaching the Rams, 49 points against him when he was coaching the Rams.
Yeah, look, I think any time that when you're in that kind of competitive environment, and look, he's a talented coach. Okay, he was able to put together a pretty good squad here. You know that they were able to do some pretty good things at that time during that Super Bowl run. And look, I think that the Saints don't win that Super Bowl without his leadership there. And so you can't take anything away from him. I know that he got sideways with some of the other people, and at some point that relationship got kind of toxic, and so there had to be a split. I understand that too, and that happens all the time, but that doesn't take anything away from his talent. He's able to coach these guys, and that he's got a command of what he's going to do. He's going to be aggressive, and I can tell you right now, like I said before, what does Cleveland have to lose? Look, they're out there swinging for the fence each and every time. It's just great. In a way, it's kind of it's a nice environment to be in from the standpoint of like, hey, we're out here, we're free and easy, and everybody's supposed to do what they do. We're all learning, we're all young, and each and every day we get better. And so now, hey, we got a chance to really, really do something good this week, and this would be a great time for us to get started and finally get our first win in a long time. Well, that's what New Orleans has to face, and I think if we go out there and do what we're supposed to do and execute the way we are, and then play defense, like the kind of aggressive defense that we can play, we can shut them down and shut them down quick, and then it begins to be a thing where, okay, they're going to keep trying and keep trying and keep trying, but they're not going to have enough to be able to overcome that.
Well, we'll see you bright and early on Sunday, Steve, 8 o'clock, you and I, for the Acadian Windows fans' first take. Hopefully Saints can let's get a W here. Let's come away with a win, man.
I think that, like I said before, I think that they don't want to replicate that 2 weeks in a row, so I think that the stuff is correctable. It's not like it's something like, oh boy, they forgot how to play. And that all of a sudden the Saints defensive coaches all of a sudden didn't get stupid overnight. So
right.
I think, I think everything will rectify itself, and we'll get back on, a winning track on Sunday.
All right, Steve, we'll see you on Sunday.
All right. Bye.
All right. Steve Court, co-host with me on the Acadian Windows Fans First Take on WWL, and former Saints offensive lineman. Real quickly, our lineup on Sunday. So it's Steve and I starting you off with Fans First Take 8 to 10 in the morning. Then it's countdown to kickoff on the Saints Radio Network right here on WWL with Bobby Hebert and Christian Garrick. And game time, high noon, Zach Strief and Deuce McAllister. We will take a break. We're coming back with an update on our Blue Runner Foods opinion poll, and we'll get into LSU Auburn next hour. Who wins Saturday, LSU or Auburn? Log on, cast your vote, and we'll update you next. I'm Seth Dunlap. This is The Last Lap. Keeping an eye on Florence, Hurricane Florence, that is making landfall out in the Carolinas. Certainly our thoughts are with everybody out there tonight. We certainly have been there and know what they're going through. The latest on Florence is online at WWL.com. You can check there. And again, it is making landfall tonight. The first bits of it kind of coming in as we speak. Thanks again to Steve Court for joining us. Tim, give me an update on that opinion poll, if you can. Coming up next hour, we will talk a little more NFL and Saints Browns. We'll go behind enemy lines with Dan Lobby of Cleveland.com. We'll talk Miles Garrett. We'll talk Tyrod Taylor. Still can't figure that out. Now, he said Tyrod in his opener last week on CBS. I'll get Dan to tell me if it's Tyrod or Tyrod. A little Bengals-Ravens update, and we'll keep making predictions for this week. And then we'll transition to college football. I'll make my SEC picks for the week, and we'll talk to James Crepia of AL.com. Covers the Auburn Tigers for them to give us a behind enemy lines look for the LSU Tigers. Speaking of LSU Tiger fans, get ready for Auburn LSU Saturday right here on WWL. And it is an afternoon game. So our game day here on the station starts at 10 a.m. You can join Christian Garrick and one of LSU's all-time winningest quarterbacks, Herb Tyler, for the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. And then LSU's official pregame with Chris Blair, voice of the Tigers, will start at 12:30. And yep, kickoff at 2:30. Temperatures are expected to be in the 90s for this game. Well, that certainly will play a part here. And then, of course, after the game, you can join LSU's post-game show for the Purple and Gold Point After from approximately, look, after the game, 7:30, 6:30, 7:30, somewhere around then, till 10 p.m. It's LSU Saturday, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Tiger Radio WWL. Here's an update on our opinion poll, courtesy of Blue Runner Foods, who wins Saturday. 71% of our audience, Tiger Optimists, saying LSU is going to win as a 9.5-point underdog. I don't think so. A little spoiler alert there for maybe our predictions next hour, but you're talking about a series where a home team hasn't won since, what, 2014? Only one time since 2009? By the way, the home team has covered the spread 8 out of the last 9 games. It's incredible here. Yeah, I like Auburn in this one. I do like LSU to keep it close. We'll see, though, against the spread. I'm Seth Dunlap, 1 hour down, 2 to go. Keep it right here on The Last Lap.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.